And here we are again. Today on the podcast, Interstellar, Imitation Game, and Best Actress. Where do you guys want to be?
Woo!
Where do you want to begin, Katie?
Oh my God. Well, when you're talking to people and not seeing them across some distance, I feel like it's a natural fit.
So I'm here with the usuals, Joe, Katie, and Nick. Say hello, everyone.
Hi, Murph.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, I people complain about the amount of times Murph is spoken in Interstellar, but to me it was nothing as bad as in The Great Gatsby, where Leo kept saying sport.
Yeah, that's true. That would be a great supercut, though, is to intercut Sport and Murph, Sport, Murph, Sport, Murph. He says Murph a lot.
He
He
does.
just
And
he definitely does.
don't people generally have more than one nickname for their family members?
I mean, Murph is just her name, though. Like, it's not her nickname. It's just like what
Well, it's at
everyone
least short
calls
for
her.
Murphy, I
I mean,
guess.
couldn't he call her like honey or something once in a while?
Film
Yeah.
criticism. We're doing it. Why didn't he call
Now
her?
you're becoming that pedant who hates Christopher Nolan movies for no reason, and
Right.
everyone gets mad
Okay.
at you. You're gonna
Okay, you
internet
guys, I
war.
don't know where you guys stood on it, but I actually liked it.
I did too.
Am I allowed to say that? And I never like his movies. And
I think we're all four of us generally on a baseline of not hating it. Like, I think we all liked at least parts of it, yes?
I really
Yes,
liked parts of
definitely.
it.
Yeah. I really liked parts of it, and then parts of it drove me crazy in a way that stuck with me for longer throughout the movie, and then I kept thinking about how they were driving me crazy.
All right, I'm
I can
Team
see
Katie.
that.
So I'm gonna pause it. My chief reaction, and I want you guys to just to know if you guys even understand what I'm saying.
We'll try to ride it the amazing.
I felt it was emblematic of all the things that are wrong with his movies, and that made it endearing to me.
Oh,
Oh.
interesting.
Whoa.
For the first time, like I felt like something for Chris Nolan.
That's
Like
interesting.
it
Because you felt like
felt.
it had more of his actual feelings in it?
Yes, and I felt like its limitations were kind of adorable because I've seen them so often, and this one it was so like big-hearted compared to his others. So like for example, the visual effects, this is the perfect example of what I'm trying to say. You know, at the big finale where it's kind of grid-like and he's sort of floating around. I'm
Yes.
not going to
Oh yeah,
spoil
Space Library is what we've been calling
Space
that.
Library. That reminded me the way it folded in on itself and the way like the camera was structured, all of that, it reminded me so much of Inception.
Course.
And which is an easy reference point for it, of course. But it's also like Inception was meant to be about dreams, which are very non-regimented. And that always bugged me about Inception. And this, it's something that's supposed to be mysterious and yet it's so orderly. And it just made me feel for him. I don't know. I can't explain it. Like I thought, oh, it's so cute. He can't get out of these like grids. This is
See,
the.
I saw that and I thought, oh my God, he has all the money in the world and he can't get out of these grids.
I thought it was an interesting way to show what I always feel about him in that it's so big and at the same time, I don't think it's imaginative enough or.
It's big but not vast.
Right.
I think you were endeared by all the thing, all the Nolanisms that at this point drove me crazy. That kind of made me frustrated with his inability to get out of his own way and experience human emotion like a regular person. And then I thought that got in the way of what he was trying to accomplish more than like, epitomized affection for him in me.
My least favorite parts of this movie were the parts where it seemed like he felt like he needed to be emotional and he needed to like access that side of himself where I'm much more into his fascinations with like learning about things and exploring the possibilities of things that lie beyond necessarily like emotions and feelings, but the ways in which this movie and Inception were similar were the best parts of this movie to me, and I feel like that's why in general I like Inception better than this one, because Inception to me was just this fascinating and fun puzzle that had so many different like layers to it, and I mean, it does sort of, it, you know, we don't need to re-argue Inception, but, you know, and where it falls apart on logic levels. But the thing that I never quite could hold against Inception was this idea that, like, the dreams, the thing that you were just saying, Nathaniel, like, the dreams aren't expressive enough or weird enough or strange enough. And I feel like I was really tapped into, like, this is Nolan's imagination. It's linear and it's angular, but it's... It's really fascinating. It's genuinely like engaging with the ideas that he's thinking about, whether it be how we dream about ideas and how time is affected by like the third and fourth layers of a dream. And I think this was the same thing in Interstellar. Was I think he ended, you know, the parts where he was very, very fascinated by, you know, life on a planet near a black hole and why. You know, why actual progress and evolution would be less possible on that. When Anne Hathaway talks about how it's a groaner of a line because she mentions Murphy's Law, like, explicitly. Mm-hmm. But what she follows up with that is just, like, not enough can happen when you're a planet next to a black hole. And I, like, it's interesting to me that that's a kind of thing that would stand out to him. So I feel like I was less interested when it seemed like, well, now I've got to, you know, push all this through this lens of Matthew McConaughey and his daughter. Even though I kind of liked the idea, like, I think David Ehrlich was the one who made his point in his review of it when he said that Nolan sort of makes the case for love as an evolutionary concept, which that to me was interesting. Like, that's the kind of thing that I'm into, is just the ideasiness of it. And I think, because I do feel like... he really is honestly fascinated by this stuff.
I felt like he was making, specifically this Anne Hathaway monologue, where it kind of references the idea of love as an evolutionary concept and then throws it aside for this super mystical, like, love is a power of gravity, and, like, over-explains it in this attempt to make sense of it, as if he's someone who's just like, well, I don't really understand what this love thing you humans all are into, so I'm going to explain it as best I can with science. And it just made it feel so clinical in this way that really clashed with what it felt like he wanted the movie to be about. It felt like he was trying to, like, shoehorn in all of this feeling stuff when what he really wanted to do was, like, show more black hole photography, and I kind of wish he'd just done that.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about, though. All of these things are things that made me feel like I mean, it's so weird, but things that made me feel like I knew him. Not that I want to be friends with him or anything. I'm totally scared of his dead wife, you know, fascination. But especially since his wife produces his movie, it's like, I don't... anyway.
Yeah.
It is
very weird.
Right now, as I feel what we're doing, maybe.
There's a lot what?
We're reading a lot into Christopher Nolan's actual real life.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is that I was consistently engaged, and most of that was because I actually think I would not have liked this movie if I hadn't seen all his others, but I really kind of like this. Just because it just, as an auteur movie, I really like it. As a normal movie, I'm not sure. But but I had some point... and I've lost it because I'm like all hung up on this. Oh, but like the... No, I lost it. Sorry.
Nick, save us.
I was really up and down in it. And I guess it was similar to Inception, but I did feel more kind of provoked by this, or felt like it was somewhere closer to where it was trying to get in a way. I just feel like his direction is actually kind of flat-footed. That there are times where he's really invested in building us to a climax of, for example, when we're cross-cutting between what's going on between Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey, the producer's space library, and then what's going on in this house with Jessica Chastain, mm-hmm. which felt really underdeveloped to me on every side.
Yes.
Like, really temporally confusing, because something that's taking, like, even with the film's, you know, stated rules about how time works or whatever, it just felt like those were not serving each other well. Like, have you been staring at a watch for, like, 3 hours or 6 minutes? I'm not sure which. And,
right.
And, like, the Casey Affleck plotline just seemed like such kind of postcard, psychology, like, dead baby stuff. And, like, so cross-cutting just turns into this, like, you're showing me that half your movie is not working, and you're mm-hmm. juxtaposing it to another half that I do have some questions about, but I don't know if this is what you've been saying, Katie, but I feel like he wants to gesture towards something that's really mysterious and really confounding and will make us hit our limits about how we can ponder it, and then just immediately starts like shoving the answer key in our face. Like, yes. We totally mm-hmm. know who the ghost is from the moment the movie starts, probably. But if we don't then, we definitely do now. But do you have to belabor right. that?
Yeah, that's why.
Minutes? Or?
Yeah, that's why I thought the whole, like, the people keep comparing it to 2001. And I don't know if Chris Nolan has said that. Has he mentioned that at all? Or is that people putting that on him?
He's definitely mentioned it being an influential movie on him, but not in the sense that he was trying to compete with it or okay. inspired by it.
Well, I mean, because the thing is, like, that movie is such a great example of truly mysterious. Like, yeah. it's not trying, and that's what's so amazing about it, is it's just so, like, its jumping off point is not, you can't predict when it's going left, when it's going right, when it's going through some sort of warped thing where you don't know where you are anymore. And he's just too hemmed in, and I felt like this needed, yeah, to be, he needed to not be as concerned with the answer, because I agree that exposition is his main flaw as a writer, director. Mm-hmm. But I do have...
Well, I wrote about this a little bit, the comparisons of Interstellar to different movies, and I wrote about 2001, obviously, and, like, they could not, It's not a great comparison if you're Nolan, because those two movies could not be going for two more different things, even though the subject matters can be similar, where Kubrick just so aggressively does not want to give you answers, and like that Nolan is seeking them at all automatically places him on a completely different plane, and it's
yeah.
The comparisons are like they make sense, but they're also a little bit like, well, no, like they're really trying to be from the outset completely different movies.
It's yeah. like they're both me, sci-fi; they're the same.
Yeah,
but to me, the comparison that makes way more sense is Close Encounters, even though that's also a very different kind of movie. But it's got a similar sense of like, you know, this mysterious yearning for something bigger from within the heartland of America. And Spielberg did a draft of Interstellar at one point. It does feel like you have these like little crumbs of Spielberg. Over this movie that no one can't quite translate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Contact is a much better comparison of, like, actual, like, in outer space movies. It seems like this is the movie that Contact might have tried to have been if it had a bigger budget. Like, Contact was all about the preparation for something like this, and then Interstellar is, you know, the space side of it so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When Contact gives you the perfect line to diss Interstellar with, they should have sent a poet, which is, I cannot think of a more apt description of my feelings by Interstellar than that.
But then even with Contact, right? Like, she goes to through the wormhole, and she goes to Vega, and she meets her, you know, father apparition, like, glimmering as he is. And then within, like, a minute, she's like, oh, you are what the aliens, like, sent to me because I wouldn't understand anything else. Like, she immediately intellectualizes it. Whereas Interstellar is much happier to stay in that sort of gooey, gushy, feeling-y moment mm-hmm. through the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, want to belabor gender politics too much because I feel like I'm a broken record on this topic, but Chris Nolan often been dinged for the female characters not being interesting, or, you know, the dead female characters and all that. But what did you guys think about the way, chiefly what was going on between Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey's characters? Because at a crucial point in the movie, they have to make a, you know, decision, and they can't make both decisions. There's no going back.
Yeah.
And she actually has the right idea, and he has the wrong idea, which we later discover. But then, and her idea is motivated by love, which he keeps going to in this movie, even though, you know, some of you say he's not comfortable with it. But then, even though you learn that she was right, there's never any sort of recognition of the fact that she was right. She seems to sort of fade as a character after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does actually explicitly say Brand was right.
Right, but there's no... I don't know.
Right, like, but there's like also a major fork in the movie where it looks as though McConaughey's about to pull a Clooney in Gravity, right? And be like, this movie's yours for the final
right.
mile.
Yeah.
Which would have been interesting.
Under no circumstances. Like, we stay with... It's a movie that seems to have a couple ambitions to be interested in genius women and the intrepidity of both of the women it's come up with, but really has a hard time letting them like be in the movie almost. It's
toxic game about it more than it actually shows.
Yeah.
Both with Ellen Burstyn and with Anne Hathaway.
But I also just, I mean, those are examples of moments too where I feel like, I don't know, I just can't work it out. I find that it's a hard movie to talk about, but I can't tell if I want Christopher Nolan to direct scripts he didn't write, or if I want other people to direct scripts he did write. Like, I see virtues both, but I definitely know I don't want him to direct scripts that he also wrote. And
yeah.
I do feel like I feel like often in his movies I'm watching actors kind of similar to what I feel like in Wes Anderson movies. Like, they really have a sense of what the universe of this director is like, and they're prepared to give that. And I really wish that somebody was telling them, no, 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 work against that. Like, these really need the dimension or the texture or the feeling that you might bring to it.
Right.
He's going to turn all of you into mannequins. And I did not feel like anybody really won that fight in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's no better indication that he and his brother need other writers than the repeated Dylan Thomas poem that happens several times throughout the movie.
Yes.
It's a motif. It's so bludgeon and so useless and a cliche. Like, it's been in so many other movies before, and just any other writer on hand would have fixed that. And it's a small thing, but it felt really symptomatic of the overall problem with the story being kind of too invested in itself without an outside voice.
Listen, once Michelle Pfeiffer uses a poem in a movie, you do not use it anymore. That poem has been used.
It is dead.
As is possibly the Interstellar conversation by the time this podcast is posted.
Yeah.
Although people have been talking about it for 2 weeks, so maybe they will continue.
I will say, I loved Tars and Case so much, obviously.
Yes.
And I liked how, like, I think even with Tars being, like, the cuddlier of the two, you also had Case, who was, like, no nonsense business, whatever, like, going to get it done. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about him getting to repair Tars and, like, restore it at the end there, because this has become sort of my, like, bugaboo lately with movies, where they create these, like, very easy to love characters because they're not quite human, and they're like, Tars is much more verbal, so he doesn't quite fall into that, but I'm thinking, like, Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
And
Baymax
from Big Hero 6, where it's like they can have these big, huge sacrifices that ultimately, like, don't have to have any consequence because, like, they're not really human, so you can just, like, make them come back again by, like, whatever, replanting sapling or, like, reinstalling a hard drive or something. I don't know. This is not a fully formed thought, but...
Also, what bugged me about Tars and Case is that they're both voiced by white guys. I mean, Bill Irwin I wouldn't trade for anything. I don't know who voiced Case. But it was hard to tell. Hard to tell their voices apart sometimes, which really bugged me. I didn't understand why they did that.
Case is voiced by one of the guys who played one of the plane hijacking Bane acolytes in Dark Knight Rises.
Hmm. Oh, who I, like, couldn't hear then, and then had a hard time distinguishing from Bill Irwin this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised by the sound mix on this movie.
The sound mix was awful. Absolutely horrendous. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know if I'm just remembering the other movies wrong, but wasn't sound usually a pretty good thing about his movies?
Yeah,
sound was a really big problem in The Dark Knight Rises. Like, that plane thing, that plane scene, that plane scene specifically was really hard to understand.
Yeah,
especially because Bane was, you know, talking into a muffler. Mm.
I actually sat there looking at Tars, being like, "I'm stunned. This movie thinks I'm invested in this thing."
Oh God!
Like, looking at it, I don't like listening to it. And let's recall, I bawled through the first 5 minutes of Toy Story 3. Like, I didn't even need to get to the end. You can make me grieve for any object you want in a movie. That little cockroach in Wall-E, fuck. I was out for 10 minutes. I think I see what you want this to be, and if it fell off the ship, I wouldn't care.
Interesting.
I really liked hers.
I didn't even like watching it move.
Oh, I love watching it move. Wow. Okay.
I also was like, if your ass can move that fast, maybe you should have went and got her before the wall of water was coming. Like, that seemed like that water planet scene seemed really contrived to me, and then the ice planet was worse. Like, and so then I was hoping we would stop landing on planets because the movie always seemed bad when it did that. I'd rather listen to them talk on the space station about what they're thinking about.
So have we exhausted our interstellar conversation?
I guess.
Yeah, back to the space library we go.
Pull another book from the shelf. Well, let's stay with grids and machinery and answers to questions and go to the code-breaking imitation life. Imitation of Life. Oh my god. Wow. I do not think Douglas Sirk would like Imitation Game.
Yeah, probably not.
No. I kind of want to just wind Nick up and let him go on this because I feel like he's been waiting to dig into Imitation Game for weeks now.
Yeah, the little crumbs of tweets on it.
Crumbs of Tweets is going to be the name of my autobiography. Crumbs of Tweets, a life.
A life in 140 characters.
I think Imitation Game is not bad as a movie about you can be a total asshole and still be a national hero. Like, they don't have to be cuddly. I think that's a pretty promising movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I think you can be gay and be a national hero, and in fact, we're gay and we're a national hero. It has a lot of problems. And I even think, in terms of a movie trying to... I don't believe for a second that anybody who made this movie understands how that machine worked. And
oh, yeah.
Just looked at it and waited and watched it not work for a while, and then at one point it is work. But like when they build it, and I'm sure it's an exact replica, whatever, but I never believed that the movie understood what it was about, literally. And I certainly think the movie seems terrified to be about what I thought was the whole hook. Like, watch him save the country, if not the world, and then watch what we do to him for it. And then, like, we cut across all those years and just leave them out, and then find in an epilogue scene based on dialogue alone, we gesture to 6 years of forced hormone therapy. At the end of which, like, people say Alan Turing's gender was almost indeterminate. His body was totally rebelling against him. And we've got, like, Benedict Cumberbatch on a bad day in a bathrobe with a shaky hand. And it wasn't unaffecting, but Jesus Christ.
Like, I was so stunned by the way the movie ended. I was convinced they had to have filmed something else and then gotten rid of it. Because it just so brushes off the horrific actual ending of his life. Which, like you said, Nick, I thought that was why we were telling this story. I mean, not that he didn't do important things otherwise, but, like, that's what makes it such a compelling and heartbreaking story.
Yeah, totally. And
yeah, but I actually thought, as a movie, the part that was great was the whole middle section.
Yeah,
definitely.
But
I mean,
yeah,
it was exciting. I don't know. Did you think it was? You thought it was great?
Well, I will. Yeah, that might be overstating it. I thought it was a solid B+.
Middle part or the
whole
movie? Yeah,
the middle part.
I would agree with that. I think it's an exciting codebreaker movie.
I do too. It's just that the rest of it, like, I didn't like the structure of hopping back and forth between the three parts of his life. I didn't think that told me anything about the movie.
Yeah.
Or about
him. The tentative schoolboy scenes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't tell... I didn't actually need anything to do with, like, his childhood.
Nope.
No.
Because it was way, way more interesting to... kind of like the machine itself, like... Let's have the movie break the code of this person who's very hard to know because he's very abrasive. And yeah, very, very, like, not socially adept. And so I thought everything with those other characters, even though a lot of it was predictable as, like, movie, I was really enjoying it.
In the middle part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the stuff in the 50s, I guess, like the furthest in the future, where the guy is, you know, it's in the opening scene, he says, "I think Alan Turing is hiding something," which is hilarious.
Oh, not the investigator, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. I mean, it leads to this really interesting scene, like an interrogation scene, basically, where he, you know, Turing finally shows up, and that, I thought that was a good scene, but it sets up this, like, false mystery that it feels like if anyone's going to see this movie, they already know the answer to the supposed mystery, and it's very, like, kind of baffling about what they expect you to know and what they're trying to, like, spin out as a mystery.
Yep.
Hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like we all like the middle part. but not the whole movie.
Yeah, the end. I think ultimately, it's unambitious to the point of cowardly at the end, and it's hard to not walk away with that taste in your mouth, because like that's how it, and even like those parts of his life being so kind of like handled with all thumbs, like it affected. I think Keira Knightley gives a very good performance, but ultimately, like, in service to what?
Right.
And makes it seem. I want to give it sort of less credit for that, because it's just sort of like, eh, yeah, she's good. Like, I think she's better in the two other movies she was in this year, which is not to slight how good she is in Imitation Game, but like, it's ultimately because it's in service to what amounts to not very much. I can't get that enthused about it, like, or about like an Oscar nomination.
She would announce not very much because her character's purpose, or because their relationship ends, or what?
Because her character, the degree to which like she's interesting as a character, ultimately the movie doesn't want to follow through with that aspect of his life as much.
Mm-hmm.
So she I don't know, her character ends up seeming like on an island somewhere. In a movie that could have been, like, in a different movie that could have been.
It's weird to me that it spends most of the movie, basically, you're not really sure to what extent she is really romantically interested in him, or she thinks he is in her. And then kind of very near the end of it, she's kind of just like, oh yeah, I figured you were gay. And then, but that's basically the end of her purpose in the movie. And that's such an important part of who that character is, if you're really going to care about her inner life, that's, like, left as a mystery, again, for not any real reason.
And kind of an interesting moment where I feel like the gay thread and the asshole thread kind of come together a little bit, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so interesting that if you don't know what the big letdown that's coming, it felt like an interesting scene of marriages don't all have to work the same way. And I've already been thinking about this because, again, I'm smarter than you think I am. And I'm totally on board if we're going to do that. But you're not even going to do that. You're just going to fold, you know, and then that she gets so angry about it is interesting, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, I hear that there was in fact a long third act of this movie that got eroded and eroded and eroded to the point where the original star and the original director both said, fuck this.
Who were the original star and director, Nick?
I hear James McAvoy.
Oh, wow.
He was a director and the star?
No, the director was the guy who made Disappearance of Alice Creed. I'm basing this on one person at one festival who told me this. You know, but whatever.
God, I would have loved James McAvoy version of this movie.
Well, it's an interesting hearsay.
But the thing that makes me really angry is how now that the Weinstein Company, it seems like they've had the only problems they're having selling this movie are to some of the gay audience, right? And clearly not all of it, but there have been discontents on this issue.
Well, the movie's not open yet, so we'll see.
The movie's not open yet, but like choices, like for example, last year at the Chicago Festival, the Blue is the Warmest Color and Stranger by the Lake people called and were like, take us out of the queer competition because we feel like we've got that and we're trying to be seen as a good movie for everybody. Whereas the Imitation Game shouldered its way into like, no, put it in the queer competition, give it that award. We really are, it seemed like they're trying to authenticate its.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because there's been some blowback about is it queer enough? And then now seeing, and this was on like the Toll Road thing that Nathaniel linked to, that the way they're approaching it is to say all these demands for explicit gay sex in the movie are so unsubtle, and where does art go if we have to be that literal about everything? And it's so not what the objection
is. It's so disingenuous.
Right? It's like, where's the homophobia? Not where's the sex?
Where's the torture at the hands of his own government? Like,
where's the story? Where's the actual story that makes him so interesting? That's the thing. You're right. It's incredibly disingenuous that they're trying to frame the complaint that way, because nobody is saying, walking out of that movie and being like, well, if that had only had an explicit scene of gay sex, it would have been better. Like,
right.
It's the absolute like failure of nerve to approach that story at all in the final third.
Or think of any way that, I mean, I'm imagining there was not a lot of hot action for anybody while they were working at Bletchley Park, right? So, like,
yeah.
It does, among other things, feel like yet another way of telling gay people, we know you're all about sex and that's what you think about. But any scene that just showed us, how does he relate to his own body in general? Or what are his desires when he lets himself think about them for 1 second, even though I assume they're not being realized? But I'm also assuming that because you're not telling me, even though you're a movie about it. Like, but it just seems like compared to leaving out, well, we've already said it.
So
but.
Katie, you were totally right. Nick was wound up and waiting to talk about this.
I'm telling you, I've been so excited to hear him talk about this.
But I will say, like, Nick, one of the points you made I just hadn't really thought about, and I love it, is that they didn't understand the machine itself. Because I thought, while watching it, that it was just that I'm super, super dumb about things like science.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when people are talking about how dumb, like, the science is Interstellar is, I'm like, I had no clue if it was dumb or not. Like, because I don't, you know, I don't get, like, math is hard for me. Like, I'm very much, like, leaned one way as a person, you know? So, like, math and science are confusing to me. And so I just assumed it was me, but it's interesting to hear you say that, because I was like, oh, well, that's why I didn't even begin to understand it.
Can I tell something of an embarrassing story?
Sure.
So I saw this at Toronto, and as we all know, like, festivals take a lot out of you.
Yes.
And I wasn't, like, dozing off in this movie at all, but, like, sometimes your mind wanders more when you're...
At a festival,
and you're exhausted and whatever, and you're thinking about, like, what your schedule is the rest of the day and blah, blah, blah. So my mind wandered, and I sort of, then it snapped back to attention, and when it snapped back, I realized that I had just missed the part where he explains what the imitation game is. So I'm just like, well, great. Like, now, the one part where it's just like, they explained this cryptic title, and I don't know it, I didn't get it. So if any of you could explain to me what the imitation game refers to, I would appreciate it.
I think it's them pretending to be a German code receiver, and that's how they get the signal, I think. Or, like, they try to think like that. I don't know. I watched this part, and I also have no idea how that machine works.
Okay.
I don't know how computers work. I don't know how my phone works. I really don't know any of this stuff.
I felt like there's a conspicuous absence of the, like, Titanic-style scene, right, where they just say, the genius of this, or, you know, in the case of that movie, like, the reason it sunk was.
Yeah.
And if the movie had understood it, and I understand, too, that the whole point is that he's building it in isolation and he doesn't talk to anybody, so it would all be in his head, but I just don't believe that there is nothing it could do besides just show us him making it 8 times and wait for the moment when they all rally around him.
Yeah. Can I say, I loved, just talk about the cast for a second, I thought Matthew Good and Mark Strong were both really, really delightful in fairly small parts. I thought that was one of the saving graces of this movie, was the ensemble was a pretty strong cast. Charles Dance, too, I thought was really fun.
I liked the acting across the board, basically. I think Matthew Good is so underrated.
Yep, I agree.
Because he's just so, so perfect looking, that's very distracting for people. But his performances are they're varied from movie to movie, and he's really good.
Yeah.
I like an actor who can, like, wield the instrument of his own charm.
Yes.
And really does that.
It also actually did seem like a character point that, like, wow, Alan Turing is not even turned on by this guy. Like, he's thinking about other things, apparently.
He's most turned on by that machine.
Yeah.
That he understands.
That he named after his boyhood love.
Oh, man, that drove me crazy. That made me so mad. Has anyone figured out if that was real? If, like, that computer really did have a name? And if it was whatever the guy's name was, Arthur or something?
I thought that was so lame. I don't know, but naming it, I mean, I really think they should have excised the whole childhood thing. And just had a bifurcated movie of after the war and the war.
Yeah.
And I think it would have still been it would have been compelling to have him name it and never know why.
Yeah.
I mean, he just doesn't seem like the kind of person who would name it. Like, from what I learned about Alan Turing in the movie, he doesn't seem sentimental like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't name anything. I don't know.
Well, that's just because he's sentimental about the explicit sex they wouldn't let him have.
Right.
Or that he was constantly having and the camera just wouldn't point at it.
It was, like, literally off camera in every scene.
That's why you always see him buttoning his pants when he walks into every scene.
That's right.
You may not have noticed that, but it's there.
They didn't have Grindr back then. But maybe...
Well, I think that's why he invented the...
He had to invent it.
Okay, so best actress.
Best actress, okay.
There was no segue. And we ran out of time for this edition. So Best Actress will be in a little, like, extra podcast in a couple days. Talk to you again soon. And remember, you can read Nathaniel at thefilmexperience.net, Joe Reed at The Atlantic, Nick Davis at Nick's Flick Picks, and Katie Rich at Vanity Fair.